This episode is brought to you by Super Duper Publications. Hello, parents and educators. Are you searching for a fun and effective way to boost your child's learning at home or on the move? Super Duper Publications is here to help. With over 40 years of expertise, they offer a variety of educational tools designed by professionals in speech-language pathology and occupational therapy. Their card decks, games, and books make learning engaging and accessible, perfect for both summer breaks and everyday enrichment. They understand the importance of flexibility in education, which is why they provide both tangible products for hands-on learning and a comprehensive digital library for easy access anytime, anywhere. They also have hundreds of digital resources for you to browse and download for free. Their products cater to all children, including those with diverse learning needs, ensuring that every child can thrive in their educational journey. Let's make learning inclusive, enjoyable, and effective together. Enhance your child's learning experience by visiting superduperinc.com. That's SuperDuperInc.com, and use the code theautismdad10 to save 10%. This episode of the Autism Dad Podcast is brought to you by Able Now, tax advantage savings accounts for eligible individuals with disabilities. For too long, Americans with disabilities could not save or invest in their future. Advocates fought hard to change this, resulting in a grassroots movement that changed the law, so people with disabilities can achieve a better life experience. Able Now accounts help eligible individuals save for the future without endangering certain disability benefits like Medicaid that are critical for health and independence. There's no enrollment fee, no minimum amount required to start your savings, and anyone can contribute to the account. Able Now accounts are specifically designed for people with disabilities and available to qualified individuals in all 50 states. Funds in your Able Now account can pay for a variety of qualified disability expenses related to health, independence, and quality of life. Able-eligible individuals can open and manage their own account independently if they're over the age of 18. If they are under 18 or need assistance, a parent or other trusted guardian may open and manage the account as an authorized representative. Make 2024 the year that you get your finances in order. Learn if you or someone you know is eligible to open an Able Now account at ablenow.com. That's ABLENOW.com. Welcome to the Autism Dad Podcast. I'm Rob Gorski. For the past 7 seasons, this podcast has provided parents with education, community, resources, and validation. This season, you'll hear from parents just like you, as well as my own kids, who will offer their unique perspectives on what it's like for them to navigate the world as young autistic people. You can subscribe on any one of your favorite podcast listening apps, and for more information, to be a guest or a sponsor, please visit theautismdad.link. Welcome back, everybody. I appreciate you taking the time to be here today. My name is Rob Gorski, and this is the Autism Dad Podcast. I've got a fantastic show for you guys today. I've been getting a lot of questions recently pertaining to helping our autistic, our neurodivergent kids, kids with disabilities, like navigate the dentist, right? Kids hate the dentist to begin with, but when there's, you know, some developmental issues or additional challenges or just a lot of sensory stuff, like it can be a very traumatic experience for both our kids and our parents and even the dentist and the staff. So I want to try and help you with that today. So I reached out to my friends at Akron Children's Hospital, and Dr. Usman Ali is on the show today, and he is a pediatric dentist with Akron Children's, and he's here to answer a bunch of the questions that you guys submitted, as well as help us understand the differences between things like a regular dentist or general practitioner and a pediatric dentist. And we're going to talk about all the ways that things are different now and how technology has advanced to make things painless and all the different options there are to help our kids to overcome some of these fears and navigate this whole thing. So I really appreciate you guys taking the time to tune in. I hope you guys find this interview helpful. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. I really appreciate it. Could you take a second and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about, you know, who you are and what you do?
My name is Usman Ali. I'm a pediatric dentist working at Akron Children's. I've been here since last July. I'm a practicing pediatric dentist for 7 years. Completed my residency from the University of Rochester. And I'm new to Ohio since July of last year.
Oh, how are you liking Ohio?
Yeah. I'm used to the snow. It's not as bad as upstate.
Oh, well, yeah, no, it's definitely not. And even in Ohio, there's differences. Like my girlfriend lives in Stowe and I live in Canton and she's like right inside the snow belt. So she gets like way more snow than we get just a half hour south.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about what the differences are between a pediatric dentist and like the dentist that, you know, like everybody else goes to when they get older?
Yeah. So that's like a general dentist. So basically the difference between a general dentist and a pediatric dentist is that once you graduate from dental school, you are a general dentist. And unlike medicine, you don't need to do a residency. and you can go and set up shop or work as an associate. For pediatric dentistry, you work you do a residency for 2 to 3 years. If it's a master's, then it's a 3-year program. And you work exclusively seeing only pediatric patients. And depending on where you trained at, like, for example, if you train at a children's hospital, like we're working or where I trained at, you are treating a lot of special needs children. And it is a tremendous experience because you come out of that program having basically seen all disabilities or all issues which kids might face. So it's very intense, only pediatric patients, and you get exposed to all behavior management techniques too. But unfortunately, it's an accepted fact that in dental schools, the curriculum for pediatric dentistry, clinical, practical pediatric dentistry is very limited. You don't get exposed to a lot. So It's really hard coming out of dental school to be able to treat kids.
You know, before, all three of my kids are autistic, and there's some other, you know, challenges in the mix. Until my kids were at the age where they needed to go to the dentist, like, I didn't know there was such thing as a pediatric dentist. Like, I was always at, you know, we went to a general dentist. Like, my whole family went to the same dentist while we were growing up, you know, from the very beginning to when we moved out on our own. And I know there's a lot of families that are struggling to, you know, get their kids to the dentist because of sensory issues or behavioral things or severe anxiety. I have one with severe anxiety that I can't even say you're going to the dentist without him having like a full-on panic attack. I have a list of about half a dozen questions that I've collected from parents of kids with various disabilities. And you've been kind enough to agree to answer them and try and help us navigate this and give some guidance. So I guess I'll just start with the first one because it's kind of along the lines of what I was going to be asking. What are some of the strategies that parents can use to help take away that fear of the dentist for their kids with special needs? Because sometimes it's sensory related, right? Something, the bright lights, the smell, the taste, all that kind of stuff. What are things that parents can do at home to help prepare their kids? And then what are things that you do in the office to work with kids like that?
So that's a great question. I think the first thing is try to create a social story. Now, we know that autism is a spectrum. So exclusively, we're talking about children with autism. You might have that level one child whose behavior is kind of like a neurotypical child, right? You know, the anxieties which they face. Or you might have the level three kid who is with possible cognitive delay in development. And then it's like, how do you prepare best for that child? So the first thing I'd say is create a social story. There are numerous cartoon programs. For example, there's Dora Goes to the Dentist. There was one today I was watching, Mickey Goes to the Dentist. So try to create a sense of familiarity for the dental office so that the child is not in a state of shock, because a lot of kids with special needs have had so many medical procedures done, have so many office visits that they will freak out if they see that white coat. So, you know, I would say one thing would be to, if you can show them a storybook and show them a character, hey, this child is going to the dentist. You can get a mirror and an explorer from the dollar store, you know, have them play around with that small dental mirror we use at home. That would help too. And then there are a long list of things which I say don't do. Like, for example, if you had a bad experience with the dentist, don't mention it in front of the child. Like, hey, daddy had a root canal done. At least you're not getting that done. Or mommy had an extraction done. And at least you're not having that done. And you would not believe how many parents actually say that to kids when they're in their office with us. So any negative experience which you have, please don't mention it to the child. Another thing would be siblings. You know, they can joke around with a kid. Hey, you're going to the dentist today. You're gonna get poked, or they're gonna pull out a tooth out from you. And we have kids like who come in for cleanings, and they're expecting that we're gonna pull their teeth out. So I would say, like, I know controlling siblings would be hard, but for parents, at least don't mention your negative experiences. And I guess the most important thing is preventive care. So don't get to that point where we are anticipating a procedure in which there might be in which there might be pain or, you know, discomfort for the child. And pediatric dentists there are a lot of pediatric dentists around. And I perfectly see what you're saying, that a lot of people don't even know that there's an option of a pediatric dentist. Then they end up going to a general dentist. So prevention is key. There are long waiting lists to see pediatric dentists to establish care early. Get on the waiting list early before there are any issues and come in for that 6-month appointment. Preventive care is critical, especially with children with special needs. And I would say that the most important thing would be to prepare the child early on for a visit by seeing the dentist. Some parents are of the belief that, you know, you don't need to see a pediatric dentist until the kid is like 4 or 5. That's wrong. You should be seen by age 1, because if you are able to see a cavity forming early, there are a lot of options for us. But if the tooth is like the cavity has gotten worse or there's pain, then our options really are limited. Dentistry, pediatric dentistry has evolved so much that there are so many options for you right now. We have so many tricks up our sleeve that, you know, that conventional drill and fill mentality, we're trying to get rid of that. And our emphasis now is on prevention.
So one of the questions that I got was from parents related to specific challenges like pica, right, where their kids are chewing on non-food items, and that can be damaging to the teeth, right? If they're chewing on rocks or wood or whatever it is that they're doing. Do you see kids that struggle with those types of issues?
We see kids with a whole range of sensory issues. Pica definitely, because that can cause trauma to your teeth. And that's, again, where prevention comes in, because if you're applying topical fluoride every 3 to 6 months, that would reduce sensitivity. If there is, if they've broken off a piece of tooth, you know, which could cause a cavity, we have a medicine called silver niamine fluoride. Which has completely changed pediatric dentistry now. It is a medicine. It's a very concentrated form of fluoride, which we can apply to any area that is getting a cavity. And it basically kills all the germs that would cause a progression of the cavity. And the U.S. has been kind of slow in getting this into its mainstream pediatric dentistry, but it's been used in Japan for more than 70 years. It's being used in Europe too. And we use that so much now that every tooth, the conventional wisdom was that, okay, you get a cavity, you have to drill it out, you have to put a filling in there. You don't have to do that anymore. You see a cavity, if it's not that bad, when we can save the tooth, we can apply this medicine on the tooth. And it's just like painting a tooth it's like we tell kids, you know, it's just like painting your nails to girls. So we just take a brush and paint it on your teeth and you're done. So we see kids with not only autism, but with a lot of sensory issues, with a lot of syndromes. And I think even some syndromes, obscure syndromes, which I read about and which I had to read it for the dental boards, right? We see them at children's. So I think I've seen over here almost everything during the 6 months I've been here.
Just because you mentioned the fluoride, there's a lot of misconception or disinformation surrounding fluoride. Can you explain like what it is and why it's beneficial and you know how it's like safe for us to use?
There is tons and tons and tons and years of years of research about fluoride. It is very safe to use, and the only concerns about fluoride arise is if you use it in a very, very high concentration, like if someone takes a whole tube of toothpaste and ingests it. That's what the concern. Fluoride has been researched over years, not only in the U.S. but also in Europe and other parts of the world, and it is extremely safe to use. And unfortunately, a lot of people who end up not using fluoride for their children, they have some of the worst forms of cavities that we see, because there also is, unfortunately for children generally now, the sugar intake is so high, you need fluoride. So what fluoride basically does is it has an antimicrobial effect in the mouth. It kills the bacteria that causes the cavities, and also remineralizes your tooth structure, because the bacteria basically dissolves the tooth structure. And it kind of like remineralizes it. So it makes it more resistant to an acid attack by the bacteria. So fluoride is very safe to use. I mean, if it helps my kids, we get the 3 to 6 month fluoride application. I do it for my kids. We use fluoride toothpaste. And I think one thing interesting is, now that you brought it up, like we were always taught for fluoride, you know, if you're using a fluoride toothpaste to spit it out, right? You rinse and you spit out. Well, the latest research is actually that when you use a fluoride toothpaste, you spit out, but you should not rinse. Because if you're rinsing, that fluoride is not in touch with your teeth. And the amount of fluoride that you use in your toothpaste is so safe to use. Like for kids, like At one point, we were told to use training toothpaste. Now, the recommendation is do not use a training toothpaste. For someone who is under three, use a rice grain size of toothpaste. If they swallow it, it's perfectly safe. So for 3 to 6 years of age, you can use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste. So a lot of parents will come to us, you know, like the kid is combative, they just not let us brush their teeth. So I tell them, okay, if they're under three, put it on a brush, a smear layer. If they're under six, put it a pea size and do it when they're sleeping. You know, they're not going to find you then. So it's hard for, and I totally get it, but this is the technique we tell a lot of parents to do is like, you know, brush the child's teeth even when they're sleeping. If you can't get a toothbrush on, you can get a gauze, you know, wet gauze, just wipe it on the teeth so that the sugar is off the teeth. So going back to your question, fluoride is perfectly safe. All the pediatric dentists I know, they use it for their own kids. And I think you do a lot of damage to your child's teeth by not using fluoride. But that's the thing, right? There's so much misinformation on the internet that these conspiracy theories, you can't really, I mean, there are a lot of people who unfortunately believe that fluoride is bad for you.
What about mouthwash for kids? Is that something that is a positive thing that parents should be using?
So that's a great question. So if you're using a fluoride toothpaste has more fluoride in it than a mouth rinse does. So Okay. Kind of you're doing harm. Like if you use a toothpaste that you rinse out and then you use a mouth rinse. So you're basically going from a more potent concentration to a less potent. So I would tell you that if you just use a toothpaste and you spit out, don't rinse, that's okay. You don't need to use a mouth rinse. A lot of the mouth rinses have alcohol in them, unfortunately, that can dry the mouth. And there's so much stuff in there that I would just say just use a toothpaste. Very few patients, like only if they have like gum issues, like gingivitis, then I would say, okay, you can use one for that. But these anti-cavity mouth rinses, your toothpaste is doing enough for you. So just use it, spit out, that's enough.
What about helping kids to floss? Like how important is it for kids to floss when they brush their teeth?
So that's great. Kids, it definitely helps because it clears out food that is stuck between your teeth, especially if kids are, unfortunately, kids are nowadays, you know, the sticky chewy candy and sticky chewy feed of foods that are getting stuck between your teeth. It's really helpful. And flossing, again, like if I would try at least once a day and at bedtime, if it's going to be once a day. Ideal is twice a day, but if it's only going to be once at bedtime, I would do it. But you don't need to, like, you only need to start flossing naturally when kids are very little, there is spacing between the teeth. So you don't really need to floss. It's only after 2 years of age that the gaps close up that you need to start flossing because now there's a tight contact between the two. But, flossing, and you don't need to use that string floss. You can get that floss, which is with the handles. I even use that.
Yeah, that's what we use.
It is so much easier to use. So don't use the string floss. Like, don't torture yourself.
Like one of these.
Exactly. Yeah. So don't torture yourself trying to do that on a kid. I would just use that. Those are so much easier to. Some of them are scented. Some of them are flavored. So kids love that. So whatever they choose, and even for toothpaste, like there are different flavors of toothpaste. So we know that with sensory issues, there could be a particular flavor like mint. Some kids don't like mint. So you can use unflavored. There's even unflavored toothpaste available. So there's so many options. Let kids choose their toothbrushes. Let them choose their toothpaste. Mm-hmm. So that will really help in compliance.
All right. And so there's a bunch of different toothpastes. Like when you go to the grocery store, right, or the pharmacy, or whatever, and you're looking for toothpaste, there's hundreds of different options sometimes. And there are like what they call like, you know, all natural or whatever. Is there, I mean, I'm not asking you to endorse a specific brand, but are there things that parents should look for and look out for, I guess, if that makes sense?
Yeah, good question.
Or
so
avoid?
Definitely. There's so many toothpaste out there. So the first thing would be no to training toothpaste. So anything that says training toothpaste, that's a big no. So I don't know why it's still marketed. So training toothpaste are no. Any toothpaste is okay for you right now. The toothpaste that come on the market for kids, it's only below six years of age that they need to use a children's toothpaste. After six, they can graduate to an adult toothpaste. So it's for six. So you can use any toothpaste, but it has to have fluoride in it. because a lot of the toothpaste do not have fluoride in it. And I'm assuming some of these natural toothpaste don't have fluoride in it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at.
And you don't need to use, please don't use whitening toothpaste on an under 6 year old. We have parents who use that, kids, and then the kids' enamel becomes, the teeth become sensitive. So avoid a whitening toothpaste for a child. Avoid a training toothpaste for a child. Use a fluoride toothpaste, and it can be any brand, because all of them essentially contain the same amount of fluoride if they're under six. And after six, they can go to an adult toothpaste.
Okay. What about types of toothbrushes, like manual versus electric?
So that's a great question. So for the important thing is for it to be used. So it doesn't really matter if it's manual or if it's a spin brush or an automatic brush. But I think if compliance is tricky, then a spin brush is probably going to get more stuff off in the same amount of time than a regular toothbrush will. And, you know, spin brushes, they're interesting. What I use for my own daughter is like Baby Shark comes on when she's using it.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different, and for girls, like they're different princesses, for boys, they're different characters. So mm-hmm. I guess they might be, if it's a sensory thing, if they like the music, they don't like the music, depends on what fits. But the important thing is if it's used. There's no really study out there that says that if you use a spin brush versus a manual, it's more effective. The important thing is for the fluoride to be in touch with your teeth and get the stuff off your teeth. That is the most important thing.
And if the toothbrush is fun, you know, exactly. or whatever, the kids kind of buy into it a little bit more sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
So, and then they, like you said, they have the music that sort of times
exactly
for that like 2 minute mark for them to know when to stop.
Yeah. There's music for their, and then depending on a child with autism, like what their sensory, you know, if they don't like the music, then don't get that one, use a different one. There are a lot of toothbrushes out there, but I would say let the child pick up their own toothbrush, select it, because they're going to comply more if they have their own toothbrush.
Okay. This episode is brought to you by Goalie. Did you know the University of Michigan did a study that found over 80% of apps for kids are designed to lure them into longer gameplay and more in-app purchases? Goalie decided it was time for this to end. Unlike the Kindle and iPad that have endless ads and potentially dangerous content, Goalie is a tablet with only apps that build independent kids. It has no web browser, no social media, and no ads, ever. It has award-winning learning apps like Khan Academy, Duolingo ABC, and Starfall, and the best part? It's completely parent-controlled. In my house, we use Goalie's kids calendar to teach my son how to stay on task. He learns life skills like how to make a sandwich by watching one of the hundreds of video classes, and can practice it by following along with one of the 50 pre-made routines. As a dad, there's no better feeling than knowing that my son is becoming more independent every day. For more information and to try Goalie risk-free for 30 days, visit getgoalie.com. That's GETGOALLY.com, and use the code theautismdad to save 10%. One of the big questions that I have been getting just like relentlessly, and it applies to my own son. What do you do for kids who are extremely anxious to the point where like panic attacks, where like you can't even get them in the car? Is sedation, is that an option for parents for their kids who just cannot deal with the dentist?
Definitely. So we have different options. So now let's go to the most extreme option, right? Like you just mentioned that the child who doesn't get in like completely is afraid and is going to freak out once they're in the dental clinic. So yes, general anesthesia is an option. We don't take general anesthesia lightly. It's only if it's indicated. But in this type of situation, general anesthesia would be indicated because we do not want to traumatize the child. So for example, recently I had a kid who was just no dentist had ever been able to, you know, take a peek in their child's mouth. So in that kid's mouth. So so we did kind of like a knee-to-knee exam. You know, the dad held the kid down, and I just needed to take a peek in that kid's mouth so I could justify general anesthesia, you know, like general anesthesia exposure. And yes, and then we did a general anesthesia appointment, and we put them to sleep, did the extractions and silver cap. So that is an option we use, but that's the extreme option. So sometimes kids get lucky that they get cavities of teeth that they're about to lose. So we're not going to put them to general anesthesia for that because we can monitor that. Mm-hmm. We have sometimes we can use the medicine that I talked about in the beginning, silver diamine fluoride. which kind of puts a stop on the cavity. And, you know, but you need a certain level of patient cooperation to even do that. So if that's not even an option, if a fluoride is not even an option, then we go for general anesthesia. If it's like a limited, like one tooth extraction, we have sedation services at the hospital. We might just do that. But if it's like extensive work we're about doing, of doing like extractions or silver caps, then we're going to put the child to sleep. And I'd like to mention about silver caps, because there is some confusion about that. I hear that on forums too, is that silver caps are the standard of care for a child who is put under general anesthesia. So there's years of research on them, more than 80 years of research on them, and they are very durable. And if a child is being put under general anesthesia, we want to do work that has the least chance of failure. A filling can fail too. A silver cap can fail as well, but a silver cap just has less chance of failing than a filling does. So that is why we do silver caps in the operating room. They are the standard of care. And yes, they look bulky. People have concerns about metal, but they're just durable. They hold up with time. And it's something we end up doing. If the kid is being put in general anesthesia, that is usually what we end up doing. If there's a cavity present. But we do operating room general anesthesia is for the cases where all other. So basically, it's like, okay, fluoride is not going to work. Sulfadiamine is not going to work. The child does not have the ability to cooperate with nitrous oxide, laughing gas. We did talk about that. But that's an option too. We use for the child who can cooperate.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. So the first check. So it's a no for laughing gas. Fluoride is a no for nitrous. It's a no for a lot of kids are not candidates for sedation services too, because they might have large tonsils or, you know, so then we take them to general anesthesia. So we take kids to general anesthesia when all the other options are, we cannot use them.
When parents feel that there needs to be some type of sedation, pediatric dentists are the ones to go to for that type of thing with kids, right?
So some general dentists do sedate, but I think the luxury we have at Akron Children's Hospital is that we work with such an excellent team of anesthesiologists, and it is a hospital environment. So if any child is being sedated, the parent has to think to himself, if God forbid something were to happen during that procedure, where would you want that complication to happen? Would you want it, and who would be your, and that's a question I think parents should ask whoever, if they're going outside. Yes, there are a lot of dentists who are comfortable doing it, but you always have that question, like if something were to happen, who's going to be able to manage that complication? Now, I think there was a study done that I think 911 will take like 10 to 11 minutes of getting someplace. If you call 911, and if you're in a remote area, who knows? So, over here, you have the luxury of working with pediatric anesthesiologists. You are in a hospital setting. So if anything were to happen, you have a whole team ready to help you and
manage the airway and do all kinds of.
Exactly. And here at Akron Children's or any hospital setting or any children's hospital, the dentist, we are not responsible for the airway. It is the anesthesiologist who is. So our work is only on the dental. We're not focusing on the meds. We're not concerned of looking at the stats. And that's the way, and actually that's the latest AAPD guidelines too. So a general dentist can sedate some, I don't want to speak for anyone like in terms of like what their comfort level is, but if it was my child, I would want them to be in a hospital setting. That's what I think about it. And with pediatric anesthesia. So that, and we have such an excellent team of anesthesia here. And they are like outside offices too. They have an anesthesiologist come over. So it's a medical anesthesiologist or a dental anesthesiologist. That is perfectly safe too, because they are trained in dealing with the airway. We're dealing with pediatric patients. Pediatric patients can be tricky because if they run into complications, they can desaturate pretty quickly. So over here, our concern is only with the dental part. The airway, you know, and because I think you mentioned you were familiar with Akron Children, so slightly complicated kids get to the main building. If they're not that complicated, then we do them in OSC. So and kids are being put to sleep for dental and for other procedures day in and day out over here. So as long as there is a medical personnel or a dental anesthesiologist involved, I think it's perfectly safe to do that.
It's so they can focus. Everybody can focus on their job and not have to try and multitask especially when it comes to kids and managing airways and things like that. I was a medic for a long time. And so I totally agree with you. Like I, when my kids need to have something like that done, like I want, if something happens, I want a team already there ready to manage that crisis instead of having to call 911 or, you know, have people who are, who maybe practice that, but don't have that experience to where they can react and you can manage your kids' care. So I appreciate all of that. So thank you.
The American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry is also moving towards that now, enforcing it that you cannot be the one administering the meds and supervising the airway. And it just makes sense. And I think oral sedation, so it's kind of like a different part of the country. I think in this part of Ohio, oral sedation really has fallen out of favor. Now it's basically, it's you do it under intubation or deep sedation. So it's just that there's so many things that can go wrong. And, you know, even when, to be honest, like even during a general anesthesia, sometimes something can happen, but at least, you know, the anesthesia is in the room. They can page someone, someone can help them. So it's like, you know, what is the safest environment for a child to be worked on? Because earlier there were, I think right now, especially I think when parents have a lot of concerns about anesthesia, they hear the word sedation. Mm-hmm. You hear those one or two cases that happen in the news, and then everything is like they become scared, and rightly so. But I think the safest setting to do it is, again, period, in a children's hospital.
And that may be really even the only option for some families in order to have their kids receive the dental care that they need, period.
Yeah,
you know? So knowing that that's an option, I think, is helpful for parents, because I don't know that many of them are aware that that is something that they can do.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, a lot of people, unfortunately, like because of insurance issues, they can't go to a particular dentist. We take all insurance as Akron Children. So some of the kids who are, you know, socially disadvantaged kids, we see them. So, and these are the kids who have had the most barriers in getting to be seen by a dentist.
Yeah.
But we see these children, and general anesthesia is a service that Not every child with autism or not every kid with special needs needs to be put under sleep. That's a misconception.
Right.
I mean, for example, I've worked on kids with Down syndrome. For example, I've used laughing gas successfully on them. So it's just, it's a spectrum, right? But the kids who are going to be the level threes are going to have some kind of an intellectual, you know, cognitive delay. That's where probably you're going to need the general anesthesia.
And knowing that, and I think, there's so many parents out there that I hear from, because this is such a common question. I've been wanting to do this episode forever, and I'm really grateful that we were able to put this together, because they just don't realize that that sedation is a safe option for them in the right environment. And a lot of times there will be years between visits because it's so traumatizing for the kids and it's traumatizing for the parents to try and like manage that situation in real time. And, you know, knowing that you have an option that can make the experience positive for your kids so that they're not afraid to go back the next time and you can start establishing those healthy patterns, I think makes a big difference.
Yeah. And if a kid is, for example, you do general anesthesia once, so they're kind of cavity free, and then can come in for like regular hygiene appointments, you know, they come in, they don't have any of those bad experiences. No one is forcing them. They're just getting their teeth cleaned. You know, it's a desensitization visit. Those visits over a couple of months, over a couple of years will help, and they'll get rid of that fear. But unfortunately, what happens is a lot of these kids we see is when they come to the ED with a facial swelling, right? They go to the ED and then the ED contacts us and it turns out their whole mouth needs to be fixed because they never were able to get dental care. And it's not that the parents didn't try. The parents tried, but, you know, the dentist, unfortunately, the dentist wasn't able to manage them. They weren't able to take a good look in.
Yeah.
So, and you have to, and of course, for parents who are parents who have special needs children, everything is kind of like a struggle, right? From the very beginning, you wait 2 years for the neuropsych eval. You have to fight insurances for ABA. You have to get OT. You have to get speech. You have to fight for IEPs. Everything is a challenge. So you know, dental, I guess, gets obviously it'll get put on the back burner, but they don't realize that fortunately what happens when they present with that abscess and then they go to the general dentist, they put them in antibiotics, but they can't manage them. So it's such a challenge. So, and I perfectly understand why, unfortunately, they cannot pay attention to dental because they have so many other challenges in their life.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, we have very limited bandwidth, I think, a lot of times. And just the idea of taking my kids to the dentist, especially my middle child, is like, there are so many things I would rather do than have to go through that or put him through that. And, but with options that can help make it less traumatizing for him, and he can go in and get things done and either not remember it or, you know, whatever, is an avenue that I need to look at, to help make sure that he gets the care that he needs without, you know, making things worse emotionally for him. And the other thing that I wanted to point out too, that you mentioned, you know, kids as young as, you know, 1 year old, bring them into the dentist and have them start, because when you start them off that young, then they become familiar with it and it becomes less scary, right? Because odds are they're not having traumatic experiences at the dentist at 1 year of age, right? I mean, their teeth are coming in and they're probably in good shape, and you can stay on top of it, and kids can maybe avoid some of those traumatic experiences for them that can make that a more challenging journey going forward.
Yeah, that was exactly. A really good point. And if they come in at 1 year, so the important part of the dental visit is also like parent education too, right? Mm-hmm. So if they're coming in at 1 year of age, they probably don't have a cavity. But, you know, there's so many things we can educate parents on. Like, for example, nursing at night. A lot of families do that. And you have to make parents aware that after 1 year of age, the kid should not be using a bottle at night. That is critical, because then we see that early childhood caries where all their front teeth have cavities on them. Linked to parent literacy, like for a lot of parents think, for example, that if they're giving their kids Kool-Aid, that's actual juice. It's not actual juice, you know, it's just, we call them like, they're basically sugar infusions, which have like 30 or 40 grams of sugar.
Grams of sugar, yeah.
Yeah, and I've had actual parents act, they are like surprised when we tell them that this is not actual juice. This is not, only if you make it at home is it actual juice. And kids do not need juice, the Kool-Aid, but a WIC covers Kool-Aid, right? So it's kind of like, this educating the parent. We have so many parents we've educated on nighttime feeding, nursing, no nursing at night after 1 year of age, the juice that you give, the other dietary things, you know, stay away from the sticky, chewy candy, minimize the snacking. There's so many kids who, for example, I've seen who are like chugging in just strawberry and chocolate milk, and the parents are, okay, it's milk. Well, milk itself, white milk, is perfectly okay to drink. But chocolate milk and strawberry milk, some of the worst forms of cavities I have seen have been in kids who have been drinking chocolate milk and strawberry milk because they have so much sugar in them. And because we're talking about kids with special needs too, I'm assuming there's a cohort of kids with ADHD too. So this sugar is not helping that. It's kind of like a vicious cycle. And unfortunately, there's so much misinformation around, you know, regarding diet, regarding fluoride, which we talked about. So at least if they're coming in at 1 year of age, we are educating the parent. And I mean, the visit is just going to be barely 5 minutes, even less than looking for me or looking at the child's mouth. But it's the parent education component that is critical. And especially the children, a lot of families have pretty much low health literacy, which we see at Akron Children's. So educating them is critical.
And I guess my last question is, when you say pediatric dentistry, what age do you guys cap off at?
So that's a good question. So pediatric dentistry, that's something which technically pediatric dentistry is up to 21 years of age. But because of we're kind of like enormous weight, we're kind of like the last stop for everyone. We're kind of restricting new patients right now at 10 years of age, because after 12 years of age, kind of your permanent teeth are in there. So that is a point where a general dentist might be able to come in there. But right now for us at Akron Children's, we have relationships with other places around which have OR, general anesthesia, and sedation services available too. So if they have their full adult teeth and they need an adult tooth taken out or adult teeth issues, then we can refer them to other facilities that are close by that can take those kids. But right now at Akron Children's, we are restricting new patients in the dental clinic to 10 years of age. But sometimes, but and I think existing patients right now is up to 14 years of age. But the pediatric dentistry specialty goes up to 21 years of age. But a lot of, but there's, I think the overwhelming pediatric dentist, after you have your full adult teeth in your mouth, which is usually at age 12, we tend to graduate to a general dentist. But then for a special needs child, it's slightly different. We're more, much more flexible on that.
Okay. All right. I really appreciate all of this because this is such a challenge for parents and for kids. And I think that education, like you mentioned, is really important. And I think there's a lot of information here that, that people are probably not aware of that can be very helpful, whether they're living in Ohio or they're living somewhere else in the country. Find a pediatric dentist and, you know, check your local children's hospital. You know, if you need some type of, you know, sedation dentistry for your kids or there's extreme challenges, reach out to your local children's hospital and schedule an appointment and go from there. And like you said, if they're over age or whatever, you can, they can refer you out to an appropriate facility that can manage the situation and meet their needs. So, what is the best way for parents to find out more about Akron Children's Hospital?
So you can go to the website, Akron Children's Hospital. We have a website, we have social media. You can look up our, hospital and the dental clinic on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And you can also contact us, for any questions. We take, questions from everywhere. We get kids from out of state. I recently had a kid, from Georgia contact us. So, there, our patient service coordinators will definitely try everything to help you, and we will address whatever questions you have. Sarah Martin is our manager. She's great at what she does. So direct questions to her.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll have all the links and social media stuff in the show notes so that people can check it out and follow you guys. And I really appreciate your time. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Before we go, I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you so much for taking the time to tune in and for all the support you guys have shown me over the last 7 seasons. I am so grateful and appreciative of each and every one of you. If you have found this useful or you just enjoyed listening, if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever app you're listening to this on, or share it with your friends or whatever, it's a great way to support the show. Thank you. I really appreciate it. You guys can reach me at theautismdad.link. That's theautismdad.link. And we'll talk soon. Thanks. Bye.